Hi there, I'm Cord, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Cord.
Thank you for having me here. How does it last until 8 o'clock, the meeting?
8:15. You got about an hour, bud.
Okay, so I was thinking about maybe speaking for 40, 45 minutes, something like that, and then if we have some discussion after that. Yeah, thank you for having me here. I'm here because I don't want to drink again. That's the only reason why. I need to carry this message, and carrying this message is one of the most powerful things that keep me sober and keep me close to God that I have at my disposal today. So that's why I'm here. My home group here in this continent, at least, is Bridge to Shore. We meet on Monday nights at 2218, the Alano Club there, which is, by the way, the oldest functioning Alano Club in the known universe. It's pretty cool. My sobriety date is January the 12th, 1999. And as I've said before, you know, I like saying that I got sober sometime in the last century. It sounds pretty cool. But, you know, I barely just made it. Kind of my qualifications for being here, I guess, is that I've been working this program from the Big Book since August of 1999. And just to outline for you guys where I'm coming from is that in about Christmas of 1998, something like that, I'd been both test driving the physical allergy of this illness and the mental obsession for some time, and I was pretty convinced that I couldn't drink. I was pretty convinced that I had an allergy towards alcohol, and I was pretty convinced that I couldn't live any kind of a functional life if I was drinking alcohol. And what ended up happening is that I, through a series of unfortunate events, I ended up kind of without a home, traveling around Europe drinking, and one of the places I was staying was my dad's house. He lived in Belgium at the time, and I had a moment of clarity there, and I got totally convinced that I would die if I wouldn't stop drinking. And I wasn't even 21 years old, and I can't explain why I had this gift of despair at that moment in time. And today, as I perceive reality, it was only through the grace of God, as I understand Him, that I had that despair. There are people who drink like I did all their lives, and they never get that despair. You know, they never get that motivation, if I might say. So, you know, I don't know. I just was totally convinced there were no empty, you know, rounds left in the Russian roulette I'd been playing. Totally convinced. So I called, you know, back home and got back on the track of trying to stay sober. And I remember when I was on a plane riding home, I made a short list of what I was gonna do to stay sober. And I remember I was gonna, you know, wake up early in the morning. I never woke up early in the morning, you know, if I was drinking, or you know, it's kind of, I was going to do it every day, you know, and I was going to go swimming each morning. That's kind of a sanitary thing to do in Iceland. You go swimming every morning. There are public pools everywhere. And I was going to do that. And I was going to read a religious text for an hour each day. And so I had this thing, and then I was going to eat muesli. You have muesli here? It's like really coarse oats, really good for, you know, for your GI tract. So, you know, I was going to do that because I never ate breakfast. And I went ahead and I went home and I got up at 6:30 in the morning. I went swimming, you know. I ate my muesli, you know, really healthy stuff. And I read a religious text for an hour this morning. It was, you know, the religious text I chose to read. if I mention it, I have offended some people in the past, which is not a hobby of mine. So I just say it's this religious text is no picnic to read. You know, it's not like reading a comic. You know what I'm saying? I really had to concentrate and and kind of work through it, but still I did it. And after about 6 weeks of that, I kind of figured out I was going to drink anyway. You know what I'm saying? All my fine program, I'd been trying to stay sober there for, been relapsing for 2 years. With all my fine attempts, this was getting me nowhere, and I felt it. I was kind of getting to know what the mental obsession was like a little bit, and I knew the place I was at, you know, I was going to drink again. And you know, doing my own spiritual cultivating without any action, that's kind of my point. You know, doing physical exercise and then eating a lot of muesli, the only improvements I got from all this was maybe, you know, better stools from eating muesli and exercising. You know what I'm saying? But I was still going to get drunk. Because I'm an alcoholic. And exercise and, you know, fiddling with this and that is not going to get me sober. And I am a real alcoholic. And when I remember when I was sitting in the chairs of Alcoholics Anonymous in the beginning, and I heard somebody say, I'm a real alcoholic, my stomach used to churn. You know what I'm saying? I was like, I'm not shit. You know, what does that mean? I'm not a real alcoholic. This guy, he must have killed 5 people in a blackout and then stole a bus, you know, drunk, you know, and drove over half of Canada or something. You know what I'm saying? Real alcoholic, that must be something intense. You know? But as I read through the Big Book, being a real alcoholic, according to the Big Book, means basically only 2 things. You have a physical allergy towards alcohol, and you have a mental obsession towards alcohol. If you have these 2 things, it's like a three for two deal. You have a spiritual malady, and most likelihood, and you're an alcoholic, by the definition in the Big Book. And, you know, I definitely have the physical allergy towards alcohol, even with some cool bonus features, you know, some extra stuff not everybody has, like long, excessive blackouts where I tend to do illegal things and don't remember at all. It stops being amusing after a while. and really, really extreme, like, character changes. That doesn't mean I'm a more or less of an alcoholic than anybody else. That just means maybe it helped me get into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous a bit sooner. I don't know. And then, you know, the mental obsession. You know, I believe I don't have the allergy anymore. I believe I can drink again. For any reason, sometimes I just, you know, conveniently forget, and sometimes I just don't care. Sometimes I just put it in the context that I don't care, I'm going to drink anyway. And sometimes there's no fight, and I just drink. I don't even think about it. And so I went into a day treatment program, and then went into service. And I got a sponsor, you know, kind of the biggest, coolest sponsor in the biggest group I was attending. And the only thing that sponsor could kind of relate to me was his resentments towards, you know, how other people were doing the program. And if there's one thing I didn't need in Alcoholics Anonymous was how to be resentful. You know, I didn't need a course in that. I'm a freaking expert in being resentful. You know what I'm saying? That is the thing I knew how to do when I got into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. So, you know, and although I didn't know anything about AA, I didn't know anything about any, you know, politics or any rivalry that might exist in AA, I knew that I didn't want what this guy had to offer. So, in August of 1999, I went to a guy who basically just worked the steps out of the Big Book. And that's what we did. We read this Big Book together, and whenever the Big Book told us to do anything, we just did it, or I did it. And what happened to me is there was a fundamental change inside of me. I had a spiritual awakening. My attitudes, my outlook on life was fundamentally changed. And, you know, like, it's, you know, like some speakers in AA, you know, put it, you know, I got a new pair of glasses. It was like I'd been perceiving reality through, you know, a dark lens or something. And the dark lens was just taken away. So reality didn't change at all, just my perception of reality. You know, you guys stayed the same. I just stopped perceiving you as assholes. You know, I just stopped perceiving you as useless pieces of meat. You know what I'm saying? Because that's how I felt when I was drinking. And so, in about January of 2000 that I started, you know, feebly trying to work with other alcoholics. And for about 4 to 6 months, I probably read the doctor's opinion and the foreword 10, 12 times with 10, 12 different guys. And I was getting so fed up with it that I used to, when I got a new guy, I used to just start like chapter 2 or something because I was so sick of reading the doctor's opinion all the time. You know what I'm saying? Because I figured out he's going to get drunk anyway. It doesn't matter. But in August of probably 2000, I sat through my first fifth step, and since that time, I've sat through more fifth steps than I care to remember. And kind of since early 2000, I've been working consistently with alcoholics, and that's the experience I have. You know, nothing more, nothing less. And I've been doing this AA deal as to the best of my abilities. I was thinking maybe that tonight I would talk about my experience, you know, doing that actual 12-step work, working with newcomers, how I work with the new guys, and maybe next week talk a little bit of how to, you know, what happens when you get into a relationship in AA, and then you get married, and then you have kids, and then you go to, you know, school, and then, you know, all that stuff, and trying to do AA alongside with it without, you know, being divorced or losing your children, you know. So that's been interesting. So maybe, you know, focus a little bit on the more second step of the 12 step, the second part of the 12 step, or. So, basically, the way I was sponsored to the Big Book, that comes out of a group in Washington, Seattle, Washington. And my sponsor was kind of halfway out of that method, but still he kind of used it. And so I read a text, I think I read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, if anybody's familiar with that. It's kind of a history of AA in the context of Dr. Bob, one of the co-founders of the fellowship. And then there were some hoops along the way I had to jump through, in addition to reading the book. I listened to some speaker tapes, I did some exercises, stuff like that. And that's fine. You know what I'm saying? It definitely resulted in me getting a spiritual awakening. The second sponsee I got, he was dyslexic. Good luck, you know, and he's Icelandic. He's not going to read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. You know what I'm saying? So what do I do? Well, I'm sorry, I can't sponsor you. You can't read. You know what I'm saying? Can't read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. So what happened to me and a bunch of guys that I was hanging around with at the time that we started, I guess, working the program more out of the book. And just because I think it, just because it felt kind of simpler, and there were some, when the kind of steps reemerged in Iceland in 1996, this method was pretty rigidly followed, just because that seemed to be the only way to survive in a, let's say, an AA landscape that was somewhat hostile to talk of a higher power. People used to get kicked out of meetings, not talking about even, they didn't use the word God. They just used the word higher power and they were kicked out of a meeting. So, you know, there was some hostility, let's say, you know, toward people trying to do this book and to this work. And it's hard, you know, to work the steps and do this program in the book without approaching or talking about God or higher power, as you can imagine. So they had this approach that worked at the time, and as a fellowship grew up that was doing this program, I guess the need for such a rigid or such a methodological approach wasn't needed as much. That being said, you know, I really don't think that's a huge issue exactly how, you know, if we work the steps and we, you know, walk naked backwards through Snelling while working the steps or as a part of our fifth step or something, that's fine. You know what I'm saying? Or we do all kinds of exercises. And they've helped a lot of people. They do, you know, and they definitely serve a purpose, you know, for some. What I'm just saying, what I found in my experience is that the simpler I kept it, you know, for me as a sponsor, the easier it got to sponsor guys. So basically, you know, what I started to do more and more was just sitting down with guys and reading the big book with them. And as I said in the beginning, whenever the big book told us to do something, we did it. And that's kind of an approach that works for me. And as I said, I think the details, so as long as we follow these directions, don't matter at all. In my experience, I've met all kinds of guys with all kinds of cool spiritual lives that done this thing in all kinds of ways. But I guess what I want to convey is that, you know, if we feel that's too complicated for us or if we can't kind of reach around those approaches, it's okay just to go with a book too. That's fine. It's not a less cooler way. You know what I'm saying? It's okay just to use the book. You know, it worked fine for a lot of guys I sponsored. What I was experiencing with that is because I'm an arrogant idiot. And I used to think for a while that I was the greatest sponsor around. So I was kind of afraid that my sponsees would mess this beautiful program up as I kind of conveyed it. So I started out writing a little, you know, little directions, taking stuff out of the big book, just so these idiots wouldn't, you know, mess up the program. You know what I'm saying? And after a while of doing that, it kind of added on a little bit, and I just saw that this was heading in the wrong direction. You know what I'm saying? The directions are in the book, and it's fine for me to try to improve it, but for me, maybe because I'm especially much of an idiot, I don't know, but for me it's a slippery slope, you know, trying to improve on the program, you know, getting real specific, well, you have to do it this way and that way, and kind of taking God out of the equation, you know what I'm saying? Being so specific that my sponsees didn't even feel like they had room anymore to do, you know, to follow their insights, like the chapter 7 clearly tells us to do when working with newcomers. So maybe somebody is supposed to do something, you know, this way and do this thing, and somebody else is supposed to do it another way. You know, I'm not a firm believer in rigidity at this point, because I just have noticed it doesn't work for everybody. For some, it may work really well. And maybe their sponsor is getting there, you know, getting that feeling that this guy needs that. But it's not going to work for everybody. And what I've been noticing is that there's a reason why in the seventh chapter, when they talk about working with others, and in the big book in general, they they talk about principles. They talk about principles much more than, you know, at 3 a.m. you're supposed to, you know, do this and do that, and, you know, change underwear and stuff like that. And that's because it's much easier to maneuver, you know, within the, you know, just having their principles, spiritual principles to guide us, rather than rigid rules about doing this and that. Anyway, so that's kind of been my experience with working out of the book. The kind of the method I use, I think, is less important than, you know, kind of than the principles I follow. And so what I tried to do, and this is an experience, there was a point in time I was sponsoring, I think, 32 guys. Because nobody else could be a sponsor, right? I was the best sponsor, so like a half-assed job from my point, it's much better than you guys doing your best. Because I'm so much better than you. You know, like, so a 10% effort for me is going to be better than your 100%, right? So that's why I took on guys, you know, just endless, you know what I'm saying? And I didn't return phone calls. Because, you know, one phone call a week from me is better than 10 from you guys, right? Because I'm so freaking great. And, you know, I found myself collecting sponsees. You know what I'm saying? And I was so glad when I got a sponsee that had some time and reputation in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got him over to me. You know what I'm saying? I felt it kind of built upon my status in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, especially if he had some sponsees of his own, shit like that. So, you know, there's no limit how insane you can get in Alcoholics Anonymous doing stuff. You know? And give me something beautiful and unspoiled and innocent and great like the 12 step, and I'll just disfigure it in 10 minutes. You know what I'm saying? Just completely mess it up. Well, that's fine. It's a part of the process. So what I kind of finally got around to is that, you know, through through a series of hard experiences, was that I started, after I worked with a bunch of guys for some time, and I had guys I was sponsoring on a regular basis, but were through the work and were working with others, I only worked with one guy at a time. And I'm not saying, you know, you burn in hell if you work with more than one newcomer, you know, at a time, because that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is just, after I got to a place where I was sponsoring a bunch of guys, you know, that had gone through the work, and they don't, you know, take all that much time, but still it kind of gathers up, I found out that I didn't have the time to work efficiently with more than one newcomer. You know, and that number might be 5 for you guys, I don't know, I'm just relaying my experience. And it was kind of hard to let go of that, you know what I'm saying, not to say yes to everybody. And kind of that arrogance of thinking that my feeble, you know, best would be better than your very best. You know what I'm saying? So when I got to that point, I got guys asking me to work with them that I didn't have time for, I just didn't say no. I said, I'm sorry, I don't have time at this point, you know, I wouldn't do a good job if I would say yes. And then I would lead them to somebody who could definitely work with them. And that worked really well, you know. And the way I want to go through this program today with guys is I want to meet them 2 to 3 times a week physically and spend time with them. I don't want to spend a lot of time going through, you know, keeping them in the first 3 steps. I want to read through it pretty quickly and go through it pretty quickly to get them into that spiritual experience. Again, you know, there are always exceptions, and I have to use my insight. And I don't know if this is useful for anybody, but this is my experience, that sometimes I, you know, if they've been around AA for a long time, they know the book better than I do. They've been in Alcoholics Anonymous for 20 years, just relapsing, you know, but they've been here in these rooms, opposed to my 9.5 years. You know, we sometimes just, we go through and we do the third step together, we make sure the A, B's, and C's are there, and then the guy just starts writing, you know, after the very first time we meet, because he needs to get God. He's going to relapse in 2 days. And a lot of you guys have probably worked with guys like that. They can't stay sober for a week. You know, they don't have the luxury of you know, dilly-dating, what's the word here, dilly something?
Dilly-dally.
Beautiful. Thank you. About with this thing, they need to get some solution, and they need to get it as soon as possible. Then they can go over the nuances again, you know, when they have the presence of mind and the chance to do so. And as I said, I like to spend time with the guys I'm sponsoring. I really take it seriously to answer all calls, stuff like that. It's so important. I've gotten a bunch of sponsees just from guys who don't answer the phone. So thank you if you're not answering the phone. But still, you know, it's it's not really useful for the newcomer. I return calls, you know, and I take it pretty seriously. And And it really helped me to understand when I was working with new guys that I heard this from a speaker, and this is something I really used a lot and helped me out a lot. It's if they care, I have to care, but if they don't care, I can't care. And so my enthusiasm is going to be based proportionally on their enthusiasm. I was, and I don't know if I talked about this in the meeting before, but I was working with a guy for a year who called me, and it was probably an 8-month period. He called me every single day. This was I was probably 2 years sober at the time. He called me every single day, and just he didn't talk about anything, you know. And I could, he just relayed the events of the day for me, without ever in any context of working the steps or anything spiritual or anything based on his recovery. And that's okay, but it went on for like 7 or 8 months, and he didn't do the steps to the best of his ability. He had a resentment list, and there were two things on the resentment list, I remember. People and my bank manager, and that's it. That was his fifth step, you know what I'm saying? And this was not a guy who had any problems processing things. He had a good brain, he could read, all that stuff. He just, you know, didn't make the effort. And after about a year of this, you know, I was always, well, he's trying to do something, he's calling at least, and stuff like that. And after about a year, I kind of realized that he was taking up time that I could be spending with other newcomers. And at the time, I was busy in Alcoholics Anonymous. I had a lot of stuff to do. I was saying no to new guys. So what I basically learned how to tell him was that, you know, our relationship is based kind of on the premises that you want what I have to give. You know what I'm saying? And that you show me by a course of action, not by your words, but by a course of action, that you care about this thing and that, you know, you're trying. Because the only authority I have in the lives of the guys I'm working with is how I spend my time. I don't believe I have any other authority. I don't have any authority how what they work, you know, what their relationships are like, or how, you know, when they stop seeing a girlfriend or start seeing her, you know, that's none of my concern. I'm not the CEO of anybody's life, and that's not a part of my job description according to, you know, at least the way I read the Big Book. I'm there to relay my experience. And the only authority, the only power I have is how I spend my time. So I try to spend it wisely. And this is what I say to guys when I start to work with them. I'm not their friend. If they need to talk about their feelings a lot, I'm probably, you know, without the context of the Big Book, I'm not saying I'm going to kick everybody out that mentions the word feelings. I'm just saying if that's all they want to do, if they think I'm like a therapist, or they expect me to drive them around everywhere and stuff like that without them doing any of the work, you know, they're mistaken. That's not my job. We have all kinds of, you know, we have Dear John columns in the newspapers they can write to. They have probably old friends and their mothers, grandmothers they can talk to if they need a sympathetic ear. You know what I'm saying? That's not my job, just to do that. That can't, don't misunderstand, that can't be a part of my job if the guy I'm working with is doing the work. But if he's not, and if I sense he's not doing his best, and mind you, the, you know, doing one's best can mean all kinds of things. You know, that totally depends on the guy you're working with. You know, sometimes just guys can't write the fourth step, they're not capable of doing so. You know, that's fine. I'm not really rigid about it. But if I just get the strong feeling repeatedly that they don't care about this, I'm not going to care. And I explain that. I never dump anybody as a sponsor. I never say, I'm not going to be your sponsor anymore. I just do this little spiel. I just explain what our relationship is based on. And it's nothing personal. And I just explain to them, you know, I don't want to be your friend. I have enough friends. Perhaps in the future, a friendship will evolve, and it has done so with many of my sponsees. But that's not my primary job. My primary job is to share the experience of going through this work and getting closer to God so you don't have to drink again. If you don't want to do that, why are we talking? You know, why are we meeting? And I don't try to be anybody that I'm not. You know, I don't try to be like a crusty 50-year-old guy who fought in NAMM. You know what I'm saying? Being like all hardcore and kind of, you know what I'm saying, crusty. I try to be sincere and tell the truth as I understand it. And not to try to be hardcore or, you know, giving tough love or something like that. That isn't a part of who I am. You know, I just tried to be sincere about it. And I've said this stuff to a lot of guys with all kinds of past, and they never took it badly. You know what I'm saying? Because I think they just sense I'm being sincere about it. And at least not to me, they've conveyed a sense of rejection, because that's not what I'm doing. I'm just kind of explaining, you know, what this relationship is going to be about. After I say yes to a guy that I'm gonna work with him, I'd always take one session to introduce what we're gonna do and kind of talk somewhat in the kind of way of things like I've been discussing a little bit now. And that saves me, I've done that probably for the last 5 years, and that's saved me a lot of time. You know, because I tend to, if I just sit down and explain in quite like no uncertain terms what this work is going to be like and how I do this program and what I have to offer, it kind of reduces me spending a lot of time on guys that are not willing to do this or don't care for the approach I take to this program. And I'm not saying they have less of a quality of sobriety than I have or anything like that. I'm just saying that I do the AA program in a specific way. And it's not the only way. I'm not saying it's the right way. I'm not saying anything like that. I'm just saying that I'm doing it in a way that has kept me sober. And I know quite a few guys that need the same approach to stay sober. And what I'm talking about is basically, you know, being firmly based, you know, in God and the big book and a lot of work with other people. And so if I explain these things right away and explain my approach, you know, that helps a great deal and that saves everybody a lot of time. And as I said, I know I'm here in Alcoholics Anonymous to represent or to, not even represent, just to be here with a solution for that guy who's like me, that needs the same approach that I do. Now, if a person needs something else, she can, you know, that person can definitely find it in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's enough variety here. There's enough, you know, all kinds of approaches to this deal or non-approaches or, you know, not using the book at all, using slogans from Oprah Winfrey, and that's beautiful and fine. But that's not going to keep me sober. That's not going to get me sober. And I can't offer that kind of a program, you know. My only purpose when working with a new guy today is to get him involved in the 12-step group and get that into the core of his being. Everybody that I've worked with and has gotten that to the core of their being, that the 12-step is the foundation stone of their recovery, they don't get drunk. It's happened, of course, but it happens much more rarely. People have to pretty work well at it. If they have this idea of really, that the first thing you turn to when the shit hits the fan is working with another alcoholic, if you have that idea really ingrained in you, you're gonna have to work hard to get drunk. You can, of course, if you apply yourself, but it's gonna take some more work than before. And so that's my only goal, not to make people dependent on me, but to, you know, direct them towards God. Not to, you know, train somebody to do as I say and, you know, admire my ways, but to, you know, go and seek out the newcomer and work with him, you know. And just try to make, and I remember there was a speaker who said this that I was kind of impressed by. He said, you know, that he made feeble attempts in working with others. And I really liked that, because in the beginning I felt I wasn't worthy, you know, and I saw guys with a lot of sobriety talking all this shit, pardon my French, you know what I'm saying, sounding like they knew what the heck they were talking about and working with others. And I thought, well, these guys should be the ones, you know, let's leave it up to the experts to work with the newcomer. You know, I'll just stay here and kind of relax and watch from the sidelines. And what I learned is that there's a guy out there who needs my story, who needs my version of the big book. And he's not gonna be able to hear the version of the guy with the 35 years, you know, who sponsored 2,000 guys in his sobriety. He's not gonna be able to hear that guy. He needs my version of the big book. He needs my approach. That's, you know, and if God sends me somebody to work with, that's because he needs to hear my version of this big book. Maybe he doesn't need to hear it, you know, for more than a week, and that's fine. You know, at least for that week, I won't be too obsessed about how I feel all the time, you know, because I'll be thinking about him a little bit more. I'll be removed from myself a little bit. And I kind of realized that I don't need to be perfect about this, you know, 12-step deal. I don't need to say all the right things. I just need to be sincere and try to do a spiritual program and try to follow these principles as best as I can. You know what I'm saying? And just that, you know, being willing to, just a simple thing like greeting a newcomer at a meeting. You know, that's you know, in some groups that's a forgotten art. You know what I'm saying? You come into a group and there's 50 people there and you feel like a leper because nobody greets you, you know? And that's kind of, you know, it says the only, it doesn't talk, big, the big book doesn't talk about meetings a lot, but they say that in the closing of Bill's story, they talk about we gather frequently so that the newcomer may find the fellowship he seeks. And so basically the reason why we're gathering here is because, you know, so for the newcomer to find a place where he can go to, you know, where he can feel welcome. Not preached to or bullied into doing things our way, nothing like that. Just being welcome. And I've just noticed so many times, you know, just the relief, you know, in a face when you just walk up to them and say, welcome to our meeting. Good to have you here. Nothing deep, you know what I'm saying? Nothing life-changing, life-shattering. Nothing that's gonna rock their world, you know, make them find God now. You know, just being friendly, you know, just be, and that goes a long way, you know. And that's an excellent start. Every meeting I go to, if I can't do it before the meeting, I try to do it after the meeting, greet at least the new guys that are there. And I give them my number. And, you know, I give out 100 numbers and I get probably one or two phone calls, something like that. Which means I give out my phone number a lot, but it's the thing that works, and about, you know, getting 12-step work, getting sponsees. I don't believe sitting timidly at the sidelines like a 15-year-old at a school dance, hoping somebody's gonna ask her to dance. You know what I'm saying? I don't believe in that when doing 12-step work. I go out and I go and seek it out, because I really need the 12-step book. It's a foundation stone of my recovery, you know. And I go to meetings and I seek it out. When I needed a drink, I wasn't timid about that. I never was. I broke the laws. I was rude to people. I stole. I wrecked a whole lot of relationship because I needed that. And I just went out and got it. You know? Of course, I don't need to be, you know, that crass when seeking out 12-step work today, but there's no reason to be timid about it. There's no reason to wait until somebody discovers me, you know. I have to go out there and seek it. And, you know, it's really easy in Alcoholics Anonymous today to seek it out. There's a lot of meetings all over the place, all kinds of service opportunities. and a lot of newcomers out there that are waiting for your story. Not some old-timer story. You know what I'm saying? They're waiting for your story, your version of the Big Book. They need it. They're not going to get sober unless they hear it or something like it. So, so that thing about some people being experts and doing that, I really don't believe in that. I just believe in if we're sincere and we make ourselves available, that's, you know, it's going to keep us sober and it's going to be of some use in this fellowship. I always explain to the guys I'm working with why I'm working with them. And that's outlaid in this chapter 7 too. I explain that I'm not doing this for you. You know, maybe on my good days I am. Perhaps, you know, if I'm lucky enough. But I'm doing this to keep sober. I'm doing this to stay sober. And that's what I said in the beginning when I came here. You know, I'm here to stay sober. You know? Because this, through experience, I have found that nothing works as efficiently against taking the first drink as working with another alcoholic or trying to carry this message. You know, and the beautiful thing is I don't get paid by results in Alcoholics Anonymous. If you all think what I said tonight is a bunch of crap, and what a strange Icelandic version of the Big Book this is, you know what I'm saying? That's fine. It really doesn't matter because I'm sincerely trying to carry this message to the best of my abilities. And I get, and it's kind of like, I don't know if that goes for the United States, but we make fun of government employees in Iceland. And because I'm a government employee, I feel entitled to do so here. And it's kind of like being a government employee. I don't get paid by results. I just have to show up and spend the time there, you know what I'm saying? And in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, that's what it is. I can work with a guy for 2 months or whatever, you know, see him 3 times a week. And if he gets drunk, you know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't reduce the quality of the sobriety I got from him. You know what I'm saying? And when I'm feeling cynical, which occasionally happens, you know, I just view the 12-step work as kind of, you know, getting as much sobriety from the newcomer as I can before he gets drunk. This is, of course, very cynical. But, and if he stays sober, that's great. But I need to work with a new guy, you know? I need to do it. And I don't do it for money. I don't do it for prestige. Oh my God, not prestige in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's no hidden agenda. I'm not gonna, the guys I work with, I'm not gonna ask them to sign a, you know what I'm saying, sign a loan, or I'm not gonna put it in my resume. I'm not gonna get a discounted Target for working with a newcomer. You know what I'm saying? There's nothing I get from it except my own recovery. And that's the biggest thing, that's right, that's the biggest thing in my life today. If I don't have my recovery, my relationship with God, I'm going to get drunk, you know. So if somebody's working with you, he's not doing it, you know, for any hidden agenda, hopefully. He's just doing it for his own recovery. And that's it. And you don't have to give him anything back. If you can, try to, you know, and if the message works, try to carry it to the next newcomer. That's it. There's nothing else. There's no hidden agenda in Alcoholics Anonymous. And isn't that a rare thing today? You know what I'm saying? There's no there's no switch and bait. You know, there's no trick involved. It's just, it is what it is. So, is that good enough for day? And should we take, like, a little Q&A, something like that, or discussion? Yeah. And then we'll continue next week. Okay.
I'll just ask questions from the floor if I need to.